Yo, what is up, guys? Welcome back to Tag Team, the Pokemon trading card game's premier podcasting duo. My name is Riley Holbert, joined by my good friend, Mr. JW Krewal, and absent today is our good friend, Andrew Mahone. JW, how goes it?
It goes pretty well, Riley. Thanks for asking. Yeah, I'm missing Andrew right now. We've been missing you for the last couple weeks.
I know. I've had a really hectic couple of weeks, to be honest, but... it's good to be back. Although I will say, it is always nice to be in San Diego as well, and particularly in the winter.
So. Yeah, it's. I mean, I think though it's good. I've always told people that living in a cold climate builds character, and it's good to be able to, you know, live full time in that colder climate again to build the character up, but then to get away. Florida.
What character does it?
Southern
what does
California.
Building character even mean? Like, what is? What does living in the cold do for you? What do you alleging
it makes
it does?
You more hardworking. It makes you more of like averse to difficulty in life. I feel like I have experienced this firsthand because
more
I live
averse to difficulty. It wouldn't be averse.
Oh wait,
bad.
No. It makes you more
resilient
to difficulty. There we go. Yeah. Averse to like difficulty avoidance. I don't know, that's a little more verbose than it needs
a double
to be.
Negative,
but basically, yeah, exactly. But basically you can overcome adversity a lot easier, I think, if you live in a colder climate. So I have lived significant portions, obviously, of my life in the Midwest. I grew up in Michigan, and then now I live in Columbus, Ohio, but I also spent about 2 years down in Florida. And the vibe is just different. My Floridians know what I'm talking about. But the vibe
That's
is just
Florida,
very laid back. Everybody's just not to say they're lazy, because I can be lazy enough up here in Columbus. That's not what I'm saying. But there's just you're on the back side of everything. You know, you're just kind of, and not a bad thing. I'm just saying that more character is built if you get a little snow. Throughout the year.
I don't know. I could definitely never see snow again and I'd be happy.
Yeah, but would you have character?
Well, I've had plenty of years to accumulate character. I'm trying to go somewhere warm.
You've banked enough character that you can now go live in San Diego forever. Yeah.
Well. I do actually want to live there one day because it's just so beautiful and so nice and climate controlled all the time.
I need to get there. It's like the one area of the country. Like, I've been to Anaheim, which I guess is like relatively close, been to San Francisco, but in terms of big cities in California, I haven't yet been to San Diego because I just hear great things and I've just never had a reason to go.
See, San Diego, the way I describe it, and maybe people from California will hear this and think I'm crazy, but the way I see it is, it has a lot of the like positive traits of Southern California. So when I think of like LA area, Anaheim, there it's warm, it's beautiful, it's just always nice. But I also think of LA, Anaheim area as being a little more like hustle influence culture type of thing. San Diego is like all those positive elements, but a much more like laid back, chill sort of vibe. In a positive way, where like, you know, people are like not trying to make it as influencers or be actors or anything. You know, they're just living their lives and they're cool with that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. That's good. So, I have some family that lives in the San Jose area. So I'm trying to make it
further
out
north.
There. Yeah, I know it's further north, but you know, that's another area that I haven't really been to either in California. So I'm trying to see
cool.
if maybe on the way to Hawaii, make a little pit stop, see some
that'd be fun.
Out there. So
yeah,
see. I don't know what my allotment is for you know family life allotment.
Is it rude to inquire?
Yeah, I'm trying to. I mean, I think like just being able to go to Worlds with a 4-month-old. Is already a tall ask, but
yeah,
We'll see. We'll see. I think I just
Hey, congratulations on the invite. This is our first cast together since you emerged victorious.
Yeah, thank you, man. It is a weight off my shoulders.
Best way to get the invite is just to win the regional, for sure.
I mean, seriously, dude, you should try it. You should try it sometime.
I sure will, man. I sure will. Yeah, previously, I don't know if Andrew like gave you this affirmation. If he did, I'm going to duplicate for you. Previously, you were a two-timer with an asterisk, right?
Because yeah, that's
you had
true.
A fake one.
Facts.
But
facts.
Now you have two real ones and a fake one. So you're three with an asterisk, which is very, very cool. So
yeah, yep. I definitely, just am representing the squad.
Right. So we used to be able to kind of just say like our wins.
I know. Oh, we can write him off. Like,
but
yeah,
now
I know.
You
I know.
Have emerged know. From the trenches. You've grown. You've improved.
Yep. Seems like every
your limitless
5 years
still has less points.
Okay. Well, it's not all about the limitless page. And also I don't go to every single tournament. Okay. I'm going to defend that a little bit because, I'm probably going to like one more regional this year. I mean, to be completely honest, I might not even go to NAIC.
You got your invite and you have a family. That seems like a very responsible thing to do, actually.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. But I'm like really trying to like, ooh, which ones can I go to? I know for a fact, because my wife and I are pregnant. If you didn't know, if you're a listener and you didn't know, the due date is the week of Indianapolis regionals, which is hilarious because that's the closest regionals this year. So
classic
I don't think
Crewall maneuver.
I know, so I don't think
have
I'm
a
gonna
life event during a Pokemon event.
I know, dude. I know. It was the same with the wedding and NAIC. The first year I was in Columbus. That was a crazy time, but all the friends showed up. So maybe I'll show up for my baby too.
It's only fair. It's only fair. Well, here's hoping that we get to still have a regional together before the end of the year.
I'm thinking Knoxville. That's the one that I'm.
I'll probably be at Knoxville.
Okay, very good. Yeah, we got to send it off right. I mean, Worlds should be the proper send off. So I need you guys all to like get in gear. Andrew, speaking of getting in gear, Andrew was at LAIC, which is the topic of today's, I don't know, what do you want to call it? Impromptu episode.
Yeah, like a special edition episode. We end up having some scheduling conflicts throughout the week, and Jadevi and I were texting. We're like, what should we do for this week? We could either record really late on Thursday and serve no benefit to LAIC competitors, but get an episode out like closer to schedule. Or we could try and do something a little new and record an episode during the weekend of a major event, midway through the event, and give our thoughts about kind of what's happened so far. So, we're doing a little bit something different. We're trying it out. And, please share your feedback if you like it, if you don't. So that way we can pivot for the future. But we're smack dab in the middle. JW, we're recording this. Day one of LAIC has completed just an hour ago, hour and a half ago. So we are looking ahead towards day two. And, of course, the top eight, the championship match, to see what lies ahead in the Paldean,
Paradox Rift format.
I got the Paldean Fates on the mind now.
Yeah,
like so
I know. They just
that.
Those look really cool. It's a kind of a copy paste of Hidden Fates and Shining Fates and all the stuff that they've done before.
They're just all doing the same thing over and over, but yeah.
I don't mind it, frankly.
No, I don't mind
I
it.
I think it's kind of cool.
I don't mind it. And they're leaning into it because the names are like obviously like building off of each other.
Yeah.
I think it's really funny that like all the artworks from Paldean Fates, like the pack artworks and the tin artworks and stuff, is all like the most minute shinies they could find. It's not any of the ones that like are super noticeable and cool. It's like the ones you kind of like frown at when you catch them in the
kind of like squint. Is that a shiny Pikachu? It looks literally
it could
same.
Just be a regular Pikachu, right? But it is shiny Pikachu.
Yeah, it's a regular Pikachu, but my brightness is turned down.
Anyway, Paradox Rift format is what's being played in LAIC, the Paldean Fates.
Yep. And there was some interesting stuff going on.
There definitely is. And so let's just dive right into it, right? So we don't have a full like statistic breakdown of the day two meta. We do have day one coming straight from the source, Arcanine Labs. And I gotta say, if you had shown this to me when we recorded our first Paradox Rift episode a couple of weeks ago, and we're talking about how we expected the meta to evolve. I wouldn't have been surprised by this outcome, but I would have thought it was for different reasons. And so what I mean by that is we see Gardevoir and Charizard really occupying those top most played decks. Jebby and I, we were huge fans of TM Evolution as a concept. We thought it'd be so good, like Arvin turn one for VIP pass, Evolution, get your Kirlias and your Meleons into play. But what we've actually seen is both of these decks have relatively stable like appearances. Mm-hmm. You know, Charizard's playing Pidgeot and Rare Candies, and Gardevoir is still playing Kirlias, of course, but no Arvins, no Evolution TMs, really. Like, if anything, the new card in Gardevoir is the Luxurious Cape, and then we'll talk about that. But I guess first impressions, JW, at the day one metagame, is this something that you would have expected to see at entering the Paradox Rift format?
Yeah, in terms of top five decks, I think they nailed what I would have said would be the top five. I mean, I thought, and I had told this to people that I coached, I had told this to, you know, Andrew on the podcast, like Gardevoir just is the deck in my eyes. It's just the deck of this format. Whether or not it's worthy of a 20% metagame share, I'm not sure, but it seems to me to be the deck that the better players will gravitate towards. It has the most potential to outplay opponents. And that's my choice. If I were to have gone to LAIC, I would have played Gardevoir. And Andrew actually did play Gardevoir. We'll talk about his tournament run in just a second. But that seemed like, okay, this is the deck. And certainly Gardevoir would be a top three deck. Coming in at number one, not too shocking in my eyes. Number two as Charizard, I think that's a little bit more interesting. Maybe makes a little bit more sense given that the tournament was held in Brazil, where Charizard really gained a lot of steam. I'm curious to see how Charizard ended up converting, because I wonder if it's just kind of the deck of the people in Brazil, or if it, you know, if it really had legs heading into day two. Chen Pao, figured that'd be a top five deck. I thought that would actually be in that number two slot, because I view Chen Pao as a very formidable archetype in this format. And then you look at Lost Zone Giratina, again, another strong deck that I had in my kind of tier one breakdown. And then finally rounding it out, Roaring Moon. I thought that might have a bit more of a meta share than it did, but I'm not surprised to see it in the top five. So all in all, you know, good spread of decks. Gardevoir is just the deck, and I think a lot of players recognized it. It's got a lot of new tools. It's still, you know, was pretty good last format. Remains good and gets, I think, significantly better. So there's a lot of things that, yeah, it really makes sense. Some things that I, like you, question a little bit on ordering of some of these decks.
Yeah, and I agree. Like, Gardy definitely seems like the deck to beat. Just the things it gained weren't necessarily Evolution TM, but it got a lot of really cool tools to utilize over the course of this format.
Yeah,
I was a little surprised to see Maridon clocking it at six. I thought maybe there'd be, you know, more traditional Lost Box or something.
Yeah,
up there.
Yeah,
instead,
I kind of thought that some of the fringe Maridon players, maybe the players that came into it kind of late, would shift more towards a deck like Roaring Moon.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
That didn't seem to be the case. Roaring Moon, I think, is, and I've said this, is like, I don't think it's a particularly strong archetype. I think it fits very solidly in tier two, where it can have a deep run if it's playing a lot of favorable matchups, particularly decks that really only attack with two prizers. But I don't think Roaring Moon is going to have a particularly strong presence in day two, given how Gardevoir has performed thus far. There's a lot of players in day two with Gardevoir, and it's just being the most played deck that's one of your worst matchups. So I'm happy that I was able to predict the Roaring Moon demise.
Yeah, I gotta say, I haven't been a huge fan of Roaring Moon either. I think it's powerful for sure. Like,
undeniably
powerful.
Obviously.
It's just it just doesn't match up well and against the one prizers, and that's something we've always affirmed here. And so it doesn't surprise me when you have a deck like Gardevoir up in the top that Roaring Moon would probably not see as much resounding success. I'm just looking at the day two. So we have PokéStats Live open in front of me right now. We have only a fraction of the decks in total have been reported, 350 out of the 1,260 players. But the day one breakdown is actually pretty similar. It is a little off of the Arcanine stats, but pretty close. So looking at the day two rates to get an impression of conversion, with an asterisk, of course, that this is incomplete data. Looks like Gardevoir converted really strong. Giratina converted really, really strong. Charizard did all right, about comparable to day one. And Roaring Moon just plummeted. It really did, heading into day two, at least based on the stats that are in front of us right now. So I think that all lines up, right? Roaring Moon could not keep up with the particular matchups that it was seeing. Particularly, you know, you have Blastoise and Giratina, you have Gardevoir. Roaring Moon isn't like putting up the numbers against those. Like, it's going to put up the numbers against Inteleon Urshifu or a Iron Valiant deck. And let me just say on air, I have always thought the Iron Valiant decks are fake.
They are so fake, bro.
They're such a meme, man. And of course, like, really satisfying, really fun to get like the turn one going first donk or whatever, but
it's that's not always a strategy. Been a fake
strategy. That's yeah, always that's not a fake strategy. Right.
That's not a strategy to build an entire archetype around. I completely agree. Yeah.
So I am ecstatic to see those decks aren't in the top six.
I know. I definitely do just feel very vindicated. I put out a tier list video earlier in the week, and a lot of this is lining up. What we don't see, at least initially from, again, this is kind of some piecemeal that we're putting together from the Pokestats standings and from Twitter posts and things like this. We're kind of cobbling together a general meta breakdown, but just haven't seen a lot of stall. No. There are certainly stall players in day two. I know iCaterpie made it with his Snorlax stall deck, but in terms of, you know, that I feel like is the one thing that I missed a little bit, where I figured stall would have a little stronger presence than what I'm currently seeing right now. But in any case, yeah, Gardevoir is just the deck. And I think we should probably talk a little bit about what we are seeing from some of these lists. You had referenced the Screamtail and Luxurious Cape in Gardevoir. That seemed, from the stream games, and again, from some of these lists that I've seen on Twitter, it's like, that seems to be the way to go heading into the future for Gardevoir. That just seems like a fantastic combo. Obviously, Screamtail, in my opinion, like in my eyes, Screamtail is just obvious, right? Because you're able to snipe those attackers on the opponent's bench or their setup Pokemon or whatever it is. You can play Avery, make it really awkward for them to keep a card like Manaphy on the bench, and then you can threaten the Screamtail. The Luxurious Cape also combos well with the Screamtail, but also the Gardevoir, in the sense that you can reach those stupid numbers of knocking out V-Stars with a snipe attack, and you can, you know, close out the game or just put yourself in a really commanding position if you're able to counter catch or something. I mean, it just all makes a lot of sense. I think those are the two cards that I look at as being, you know, included in a lot of the lists that I've been seeing coming out of LAIC and should just be, if not standard. Yeah, and obviously I think counter catcher is just the obvious include, but in terms of like, well, would people play Luxurious Cape? I think now it's going to show. Yeah, this is a card that's here to stay. Very proven with some of the you know, better players in the game playing it. You saw Gustavo play it. You saw Tord Reklev play it. So that, in my eyes, is
a card to.
Oh yeah, and Andrew also played it. Andrew Mahone. So you know, a lot of good players were on that card for sure.
I think I was a little more skeptical on Luxurious Cave. I see why it's good, but I saw a lot of lists cutting it. Or cutting the Zacian for the cape, and I don't love that. I love the instant win button that Zacian can give you. But having them both, awesome. Screamtail, I think, is a major piece, even more than Luxurious Cape, that Gardevoir was wanting for. And the reason I say that is, even outside of the sniping, just having a solid amount of damage for a middle amount of energy on a basic is something Gardevoir really lacked, in my opinion. There wasn't really a single prize Pokemon besides Cresselia in some matchups that Gardevoir could use in like the, in any point of the game, really, to swing for knockouts. You'd have your baby Gardevoirs as your single prize attacker, but every time you attack with one of those, you lose a Gardevoir, and that loses draw power, that loses the Shining Arcana now to accelerate energy. It makes you like lose your steam over time as you attack with the baby Gardevoirs. And Screamtail like gives you that extra attacker to weave in that I feel like the deck really lacked. So even outside of the insane, like crazy things you could do with Screamtail and Avery and sniping and all that fun stuff, I just think the Screamtail added a layer to the deck that it was wanting for.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a good summation. I think what's interesting to me is that to fit in the Screamtail, and it serves a similar purpose, but not quite, but I've seen lists cut Cresselia. So I'm kind of curious your thoughts on that. Would you try to include both Screamtail and Cresselia, or do you feel like Screamtail alone, even though it is blocked by Manaphy, where Cresselia isn't, do you feel like Screamtail alone is enough snipe for the Gardevoir deck?
I think the Gardevoir deck doesn't necessarily need a lot of snipe, right? It's not like its entire backbone of its strategy is built off of sniping things. I think generically Screamtail is better, especially when you have cards like Avery to pressure the Manaphy, and just having that exist, it forces your opponents in awkward situations. So I like that a lot. I think in an ideal world you'd be able to play both, but the deck wants for space, right?
Yeah, of course.
I think Screamtail is the generally stronger and more versatile of the two. But Cresselia has, you know, you could justify Cresselia if you're expecting, you know, a lot of Lost Box. Cresselia really comes in clutch there. Cresselia can
and
be
mirror,
good in the mirror.
Think. Yeah.
Yeah, Cresselia can be good in the mirror, also good against Charizard for similar reasons.
Yeah, but like you were saying, maybe, you know, Cresselia in Mirror is like, okay, that's nice, but you could also do Screamtail Avery. That seems also just as good, because again,
right, that's
kind of
Avery-ing
your opponent, and they keep a Manaphy, then they're probably discarding a Gardevoir piece, you know,
you're following my through line here, right, so right. I think really Cresselia is only better in, like, heavy Lost Box expectations, because... Yeah, you can make situations where Cresselia is better, but Screamtail will serve you overall better in every matchup, but that isn't Lost Box.
Speaking of something that'll serve you better, today's episode is brought to you by Manscaped. Manscaped is the premier company for men's grooming, and they have a lot of new products. They actually just released their Lawnmower 5.0, so... You know, fantastic product that we love, the 4.0, and you know, I'm sure that the 5.0 is even better. You know, it's a whole 20% better potentially if you go by just the number naming.
Just by the stats.
Yeah, exactly. So you'll want to make sure you head on over there and put some stuff in your cart over at manscaped.com, because the holiday season is coming up, Riley.
It is.
You might want to get yourself or someone you love some nice grooming products.
Absolutely. Manscaped has served us well for years now. I'm a huge fan of all their stuff, and I'm really looking forward to getting my hands on the 5.0 myself. So if you're interested in Manscaped products, great news. You can get a discount code through Tag Team. So if you head on over to manscaped.com and use code Tag Team at checkout, you'll get not only 20% off, but you'll also get free shipping just in time for the holiday season. Who's complaining about that? Am I right? So head over to Manscaped, use our code, and that'll help support the cast, and you'll get an awesome men's grooming product to take care of yourself.
Sounds good. Yes, thank you so much to Manscaped for sponsoring the cast. Go ahead and head on over to manscaped.com, use the code Tag Team, 20% off plus free shipping. Help us out. Help Manscaped out. Help your balls out. Thanks so much to Manscaped for sponsoring.
Your Pokeballs, that is.
Your Pokeballs, yeah, for sure. Thank you so much to Manscaped for sponsoring the cast. Okay, so Gardevoir's good. Great. Okay, let's move on. We were talking about Charizard. No TM evolution. I think that's a miss on my part. I was thinking that might be the better Charizard build, but we were seeing a lot of players play it with Pidgeot. Fine, whatever. That's just a holdover. We were kind of saying this as well, where a lot of the decks of the past format, aside from maybe like turbo Lost Box decks, which have been largely absent from any of the results that I've been seeing, but a lot of the decks that were good last format are still quite strong in this format. So you have that extension with Charizard, Pidgeot of like, that was a good deck last format. Still seems fine. You're setting up those checkmate positions fairly quickly in the new format. So that's, you know, obviously obviously something that, a lot of players in Brazil tried to do. We saw that Charizard with Pidgeot deck on stream a couple of times over the course of day one.
Yeah, and it just feels like in general, the TM Evolution Battle VIP Pass Arvin idea is cute and fun, but does it actually work? You know, does it actually work the way you want it to, or do you just have like a bunch of junk in your hands in the middle and end of the game? You know, are you like cutting other cards that would be better to serve your game, right? Like, would you have been better off if those slots that went to TM Evolution and Charmeleons or whatever were just like more rare candies or were a Pidgeot line, right. You know, to make your overall game plan stronger. So, you know, you feel it, right? You can see why the cards landed the way they did. I don't think it was a crazy idea to pursue or be excited about, but ultimately, yeah, the cards landed and it was just more reliable and stronger output to play the rare candy in the Pidgeot as your primary style.
For sure. Any other takeaways that you have from the day one? I think one that I have seen, or I guess haven't seen, is Goldango. Goldango's really been absent from any of the results that I have seen. I mean, and certainly it is probably, there's probably a couple of Goldango in day two, but again, we're working with some incomplete results, and I'm just not surprised that Goldango's not there, but I do feel very validated in the sense that it hasn't shown up, because I really didn't think that deck was very good at all.
Yeah, I mean, Goldango is just another two prize deck that swings for knockouts, you know, very very Roaring Moon Core, I guess, and in some ways, except it draws a lot of cards, which is cute. So, you know, I was a Goldango proponent because I thought it was a fun deck, but it doesn't necessarily surprise me that it didn't go all the way. I don't know. It just feels like you might as well play another two prize deck, really.
That's what I'm saying, man.
Roaring Moon is just a little more turbo, little easier to blaze through.
Sure. And like a deck like Chen Pao. Chen Pao is actually interesting. So one of the things that I think is interesting to bring up, we had Grant Manley making it through day one with Chen Pao. Him, Chip, Richie, Azul, all played Chen Pao. Were you a little bit surprised to see Azul and company pick up Chen Pao, or was that something that you figured they might do? You know, just general thoughts on Chen Pao for this tournament.
To be honest, after their like quarter of playing Reggie, you can't be that surprised at anything else they pick up. So I wouldn't say I was surprised. I was personally thinking they might pick up like a Charizard again, since they just had success with it. But Chen Pao is really strong in this format, right? You have all the things you previously had, except you now have Vessel and you have Iron Hands if you want to play that as well. And those are some really monstrously powerful additions to the deck. Being able to quickly get the energy out of your deck, or even discard the energy for superior energy retrieval with like chaining vessels. It just flows really nice now in a way that I didn't really like the feel of Chen Pao before. I still don't think the deck is not my favorite still. I think the Iron Hands added a lot, but the problem is if your opponent like responds to Iron Hands right away, then you're kind of like back to where you started, as if you had just attacked with a single prizer, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't think it like completely transforms the game around it like people were saying it might. It accelerates the game state for sure, but because it's a multi-prize attacker, it's usually trading evenly.
It's interesting. It feels like an enhancement, not the boogeyman.
Yeah.
Right?
What Iron Hands does do is if you don't respond to it, you basically do lose. So it's always worth it to go for it.
Sure.
But like, usually your opponent can cook up something, you know? And
yeah. It doesn't feel like the world beater that some players were making it out to be.
I mean, if it was, then Gardevoir wouldn't be deck number one, right?
Right. Like, yeah, no, and I like, and good card. This is not to say like, oh, it potentially problematic in the future, but I at least in the current format, there's not a lot, like, there's not a big part of me saying, oh yeah, this needs nerfed, this is too overpowered, this is going to warp the format towards it. You know, I guess to some degree, because it exists, like, players make different choices, but I just don't think that it's the, again, this kind of horrible card for the game. I mean, is it something I like to see? No, but again, it doesn't feel like a world beater. It just feels like an enhancement for certain decks, you know, to be able to have a chance in certain matchups. So I don't know.
I think
it's just a new flavor.
I think if it was more like a Plasma Lugia where you could use it turn one, then that would probably be a problem. But in Chen Pao, you know, you literally can't use it turn one. And so you always have like a turn to establish yourself and get moving. Sometimes multiple, because Chen Pao is Chen Pao. And like, even if they get the turn two backs, they might not get turn two Iron Hands. Like, that's an additional sort of layer they have to work through.
Right.
So yeah, it doesn't feel problematic in the context of Chen Pao to me. Nor does it feel that problematic in the context of Lugia to me for when that deck was starting to blow up online. I think Iron Hands is fine. I think Chen Pao is a good deck. It in like a hatery kind of way, like respectful hating sort of way. It has seen a lot of results over in Europe, right? It's been doing really, really well. So it doesn't surprise me, I guess, is where I was actually looping back to of Azul and Company picking it up. It's strong. It has options. It's had recent results in the prior format. It wouldn't be what I would play personally. I have an aversion to that style of deck, but that's maybe personal biases.
Yeah, sure. Interesting. Any other things that really jump out of you? I think another thing that jumped out to me was just the lack of other Lost Box decks. That was really interesting. There's Lost Box Giratina, which I said was a great deck. I think Path, it's the one deck in the format outside of Maridon that can really abuse Hand Disruption plus Path. And it also has Countercatcher. So there's a lot of things there in terms of the late game. It's so good, dude. Please do everything in your power for any tournament that I go to make sure I try to play a deck that can utilize Countercatcher effectively, because I think that's just the card of the meta right now.
I'm with you.
Giratina is just such a good abuser of that card, because you also have Snipe Attackers, right? You can go in with the Greninja, bring something fat on your opponent's bench active, Iono Path, and then snipe with the Greninja or Sableye. You know, there's just a lot of cool plays that the Countercatcher enables for Giratina, and that's the prime example of a deck that wants to go down a couple cards, a couple prizes early, and then make a huge comeback at the end with overwhelming pressure. So doesn't surprise me that Giratina is doing well, but it does surprise me that there's no other Lost Box decks. I know we had kind of been talking about Turbo Lost Box or maybe like a Radiant Charizard Lost Box deck, and those just seemingly haven't materialized in the standings.
Yeah, I've been really enjoying Charizard, and I've dabbled, but not as much as I have historically in the Turbo versions. They felt good to me, so I'm surprised, honestly. Like, I would be more prone for this tournament to bring like a Lost Box than a Maridon, right? And so I'm surprised that that's the way the cookies crumbled. We'll see. Maybe in day two it turns up a little bit more, or it has a deep run, because I definitely think the Lost Box decks have potential. But for now, they're not showing up in like the prime players. So we'll have to wait and see on that one.
But I
totally agree on Countercatcher.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Totally agree that Countercatcher is the card of the format. That card is so insane. And just like the way that the decks have fallen, it feels like they just take way better advantage of Countercatcher now than any deck did in the past when it was printed.
Well, because, I mean, you think about the decks that are utilizing Countercatcher and just all the snipe options we have, right? Where with Guardi, you can Countercatcher something up that your opponent doesn't have any energy attached to. Maybe it takes an extra turn for your opponent to get it out of the active. We actually saw that in the stream game that Tord Rekalev played against a Lugia player, where he was able to gust up a Snorlax and it just got stuck there because it had no energy. He was able to snipe the last Archeops And that's it, right? So we have, and then you look at a deck like Lost Tina, same kind of idea where you're not even addressing the card in front of you. You're trying to snipe the bench with a Greninja or a Sableye. Like, it's just so much different than when we played Countercatcher in the past where, okay, I'm going to Countercatcher with my Zoroark GX, and then I'm going to knock that out, right? And maybe I have hand disruption with it, but now it's, I'm going to gust up your support Pokemon, go around that support Pokemon. It's just so crazy. It's so, so good.
Yeah, I also think the decks of today, like the evolution decks and the Giratinas, more reliably fall behind on prizes, and they, when they do attack the active, it's almost guaranteed for a gigantic knockout. You know, you compare it to Zoroark decks, which didn't always have a big knockout button available to them as well. So, you know, Countercatcher was more like, it was built up to over the course of a game, right?
Yeah.
So I just think it's interesting. It's a really cool card in this format, though. I like it.
Yeah, for sure. One archetype before we get to our top 8 predictions and anything else you wanted to talk about. One archetype that I did see floating around that's had some good success, a couple players in day 2 with it, is the Mew VMAX list with Excelgore. Now, Excelgore is a grass attacker that has been included in Mew VMAX lists in the past, but it basically is there to shore up some of your bad matchups, primarily Charizard, big dark dude, weak to grass, and Roaring
Moon. May have heard of him.
Yeah, may have heard of him. and then Roaring Moon as well, big dark dude, weak to grass. So what are your thoughts on, if you've seen it, the Mew VMAX list with Excelgore?
I don't know. It feels like we're grasping at straws to just keep it pushing with Mew.
Yeah.
And every time we grasp at straws to push it with Mew, like, doesn't it just end up being that playing the double turbo version ends up being better somehow anyway? So.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my thought on the Excelgore debate.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting, though. I mean, it's fun to see players innovate.
It's sick. Don't get me wrong.
Even on an old deck like Mew, where just everybody's tired of
talking
about. An old
deck like Mew. Jeez. That makes me feel old.
I know, right? Where were you when Mew VMAX was released?
I was smack dab in the middle of a pandemic.
That's facts. That's facts. Before we talk about top 8 predictions, what else do you want to discuss from the day 1 meta, Riley?
Yeah, there is one important event that we have to discuss, and that was the Cloth King on stream being crowned.
Let's go.
Cloth winning a stream match against Gardevoir was so awesome. It's still somehow almost lost, despite some insane rickiness from Gardevoir in the third game, but we take those. Cloth takes those, man. For sure. So.
Cloth, that's so sick. I'm so happy that somebody not only brought that deck to a turn. I mean, yeah, I mean, it just got in there. I mean, that was really fun to watch, and I think Gardevoir is one of your more difficult matchups. Just again, one of the better one prize decks in the format. But yeah, to see Cloth doing well, I think that's a lot of validation for Andrew, at least. I know he's put a lot of time in to his Cloth deck.
Cloth is awesome, not gonna lie. And I do like what Hisuian Electro brings to the table as well. With its zero energy swinging for, you know, 230 damage. That's pretty sick. Or 210 damage.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff.
It's good. All right. So yeah, I needed to hit Cloth.
Gotta hit that Cloth. Hit the Cloth, baby.
For sure.
We gotta talk about top 8. So this is again kind of a little bonus episode, if you will, a mini episode. And so it would be kind of fun to make predictions for top 8 and see how wrong you are and how right I know I will be. Because again, we're recording this Friday night. So depending on when you're listening to this, you can compare what we say here to how it actually finishes. So Riley, why don't you take us off first? What do you think of the top 8 decks? What's your breakdown?
You put me first, so that way you could just try and counteract me. I see.
Yes.
Little Price is Right style gameplay. I've been thinking about it. I think Giratina will show up towards the end of the tournament, given how effective its turnover rate was into day 2, at least with the stats we have right now. So I'm gonna go with two Giratinas in top eight, three Gardevoirs, that puts you at five, one Charizard, one Chenpao, and actually it's two Chenpao and one Charizard.
Say your breakdown one more time.
Yeah, I might did I go over?
No, that's okay. Just say it one more time.
Two Tinas, three Gardevoirs. That's fine.
Five.
Two Chenpaos, one Charizard.
That's so funny because I literally have almost that exact same thing written down as well. So I guess we're gonna be very close. We do.
What did you put?
So I have three Gardy, two Chenpao, one Charizard, one Tina. So I have minus one Tina, plus one Mew. I think a Mew deck is gonna make
Yo.
it. But yeah, I literally have that written down. You freaking copied my homework. You're like,
I
you know,
did.
don't
I
copy my
saw the
homework and just
reflection in
change
your
one.
glasses in the camera, and I was like,
Just
let
copy
me
my
just
homework,
change
but don't
one
make it too
answer. Yeah.
obvious. Yeah, exactly. Jeez Louise. No, that's insane. No, I think we're on the right track, right, with the Gardevoir. I think it's gonna convert fairly well. Like it already has into day two from the results that we've seen, converted extremely well, especially amongst the better players. So I think there's no doubt in my mind that at least a single Gardevoir will make top eight, and certainly it seems like multiple will, right? It just
Yeah.
seems like that kind of tournament for Gardevoir. Chen Pao is also another top, you know, pick from a lot of good players. Seems great for making top eight. Has you know, relatively good matchups across the board, so I like that as a two count as well. And then, you know, Charizard, it's the deck of the people, certainly in Brazil. So gotta hope that that one player makes top eight with that archetype.
Yeah, I was kind of debating whether I'd go to Charizard or to Chen Pao. But I felt like Chen Pao, just with some of the players that I know are piloting Chen Pao, and then I think it just can take advantage of when decks miss a beat, so it can, take advantage of variance over the course of a tournament. So yeah, I think that all sounds good to me. I'm excited to see how it plays out from here. I always love watching the end game of these international championships as we start to circle the drain and see what comes out on top. So I'm really excited to watch day two and see what happens from here. For the curious listeners, Andrew did finish 5-3-1 with Gardevoir, so narrowly missing out on day two, but still clutching out some massive championship points, as you do receive from an international championship. So kudos to Andrew for making the trip and putting in the work with Gardevoir to make that happen. It's always tough in those internationals. JW, I know you know that feeling with
Yeah,
NAIC.
frankly, I have never done well at an international. And so,
So they come for the
yeah.
best of us. They do.
They really do. And it's funny too, right? Because an international is generally, especially the internationals not in the United States, they generally are smaller than most regionals, right? This tournament had about 1,300 players. Still a lot. Still very impressive. But not near what we have been seeing in terms of US regionals size of the region. It's just kind of interesting, right? It's like,
Yeah.
but even at those internationals, like especially in a new format, like players are bringing their best and there's no free rounds, I feel like, at internationals. People are really out to
Out
perform,
for
and
blood.
if they're out for blood, and for some of these people, like this is the biggest tournament that they'll attend all year. And so they're bringing the top tier archetypes. They're not just, you know, going to have fun. I mean, I think a lot of players really take these international championships seriously. So,
Oh,
anyway,
absolutely.
not to dismiss Andrew's performance, but it is a hard field out there. And, you know, we're
Not to
happy that he's walking
dismiss his
away.
performance.
No, he, I mean, it, he did great, you know,
For
for
someone of his caliber.
I was thinking that he was, I mean, he picked the right deck, in my opinion. Like, I'm glad he did make that switch. To Gardevoir, because he was on a few other decks leading up to the
Yeah,
tournament,
I
but
liked the list we ended up on too. So, it's just especially, but the one thing about playing Gardevoir, is you get stuck in the mirror realm as well, which can be awkward.
totally. So we'll be excited to see hear a little bit more about his tournament run on the probably next week's episode. We, you know, obviously he's going to be flying internationally, so we'll see how that goes in terms of jet lag. But hopefully on next week's episode, get his reactions to the new format and how he did and what he was seeing on the ground there in Sao Paulo. So
I agree.
with that, that brings our little bonus episode to a close. We want to thank everybody for listening to the podcast, as you always do. You can find us on social media at x.com, at Tag Team Pokemon for the podcast, at Smiles with Riles for Riley, and at Real John Walter for myself.
Thank you all, as always, for listening. We appreciate your support, and we can't wait to catch you next time. Peace.
See ya.